You're listening to the Utah Man Podcast, bringing you the latest news and analysis for your Utah Utes. Now, your hosts, Cameron, Ryan, and Scott.
Welcome on into the Utah Man Podcast. On this episode, the Utes fall to the Beavers up in Corvallis, and we look ahead to the Utah Bruins game this Saturday. I'm Cameron, and we got Ryan.
What's up, Ute Nation? It's good to be back.
And Scott.
How are we, gentlemen?
So before we get in the game...
Well, you didn't answer my question.
Before we get in the game, I want to know, Ryan, how did you get stuck on Pirates?
He's pretty concerned about this.
It was the very first hill. You know, you go through the old bayou stuff and you get to the first drop. The boat just stopped on the hill. And the gates were open, and we just sat there, and then boats started piling up behind us. And then they came over to the intercom and said, "We need everyone in the boat to lean forward. Do the pirate shuffle, as we call it."
The pirate shuffle?
So it sounded like this is a normal thing. Like, so everyone on the boat says, 1, 2, 3, ugh, 1, 2, 3, ugh.
Everybody thrust forward.
It didn't work. But it was funny watching a whole boat of people try to get over the hump in the hill.
So you guys were kind of like...
We're like high centered or something. I don't know what to do.
You're like Utah's offense in the red zone.
I was going to say, Utah, they need to do the pirate shuffle in the red zone. Oh. Well, we're glad to have you back, Ryan. Probably had too many churros before you got on Pirates of the Caribbean.
I didn't have any churros the whole time, but I had plenty of other snacks.
They're $10 a pop. All right, let's get into Utah, Oregon State. Oregon State gets the win 42-34. Let's start with the defense.
Hey, who's having fun?
Let's start with the defense. That was...
What defense?
That's not the Utah defense we're accustomed to seeing over the years.
Not even close.
I know they're young, especially on the defensive front. And obviously when they are starting off freshmen and gaining freshmen a lot of reps.
And the lone senior gets ejected. But there was problems before he got ejected. I don't know. Obviously, and especially coming off of the second half of the ASU game where they pitched a shutout. I don't think anybody saw a defensive performance like that coming. I mean, it was chunk play after chunk play that they were able to get and just march down the field.
No, it was horrendous. I mean, obviously, Utah's had a problem starting slow this year, right? They've talked a lot about that. And at first, that's kind of what I thought. All right, you know, it's going to take a few series. We're gonna settle in, get these guys on third down, get off the field. Which never happened. I mean, and credit to Oregon State. That's a good team. And Jonathan Smith, he's further along than I thought he was. I still thought that, you know, these guys are not there yet. They're kind of a nice story. They're on the trend towards, you know, really competing, but I just didn't think they're there. After watching that game, I fully believe, man, they're the best team we played.
Mm-hmm. Their offensive line is good.
Really good. I mean, we had no answer for their run game all night long, whether it was right up the gut or they clearly saw something on tape to attack the edges because that's all they did. And they got so many big plays off the end arounds and just attacking those edges. And then they go bust it right back up the gut, big play, get Utah focused back on the run, throw it over the top for a play where our DBs were literally never in the picture. If I can recall, there was one pass by Phillips that was defended all night long, where he actually made a play on the ball. Outside of that, there was not a DB who made a play on a ball, or that was even close enough to make a play all night long.
Well, Chance Nolan for Oregon State was 14 of 19.
Which is a great percentage. The crazy thing is they only attempted 19 passes, which means their running attack was extremely successful.
260 yards on the ground for the Beavers.
If you were to compare Chance Nolan to Cam Rising, passing the ball, you would have thought Cam blew him away just watching that game. Statistically, Chance Nolan was through for 208. Cam threw for 267 with 17 more attempts, which just tells you it was big plays. Mm-hmm. When he was passing, they were getting big yardage.
And there was that one long throw down the sideline, which they got. But I think a lot of their pass completions were shorter type routes that the receiver broke for yards after the catch.
Well, there was
good in tackle.
There was nobody there to break.
Yeah, they were wide open.
I mean, I'm not exaggerating. There was no pressure on any of these catches. These guys were catching the ball wide open, whether it was in the end zone, whether it was between the 20s. They were getting whatever they wanted in the pass game, which you would understand if we were so concerned with the run game and that was our focus and we were shutting that down. Okay, maybe you give up some big plays over the top. But when you're giving up everything, it really just kind of leaves you that whatever Utah tried and any adjustments that they tried did not work.
Well, I think if we only stopped their offense twice, right?
First series,
and then the fumble.
And the last series, essentially, where they went for it on fourth down, missed. So essentially three series, but that one kind of game's pretty much over at that point.
So they had their way. A miracle happens. Game.
Yeah. No, they played a really good game, and credit to them. It was just that's what you're going to get with such a young team that Utah's putting out there defensively. So many freshmen. You're going to have a lot of highs like you had against the second half against Arizona State, but you're also going to have a lot of lows, which we had the entire Oregon State game, unfortunately. Just inconsistency from these guys that just aren't ready to go. And Kyle is very critical of that defensive line and how soft they were against the run. And I take it a step further. It's not just the defensive line. The linebackers didn't perform or play all that well either.
Well, outside of Lloyd, they're fairly young too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you just got a lot of youth. And you saw that. I think, obviously, you know, we touched on the DBs and the struggles they had. Take it a step further into the safety group, where even, I know Vontae was dinged up a little bit, but safeties were taking bad angles all night on some of those runs that allowed those runs to be really big. And again, you know, in the past, we've become so accustomed to having a good center fielder back there that can make a play on those deep balls on the sideline, come up with some picks, mm-hmm. put pressure, and really put that pressure to the point where they're not throwing those balls, whether that's a Marcus Williams, a Robert Johnson, whoever. We just don't have a ball hawking safety. There's no help. There's literally never help over the top on any of these. And I think that's where we're missing. I think Kamoilatu can turn into that guy. But again, it just goes back to youth. He's just not there yet. The secondary is not there yet. And the defensive line, they're just kind of a little bit inconsistent in the moment.
So I know a big sticking point in this game is Devin Lloyd getting tossed for the targeting. So he's going to miss the first half against UCLA. That's going to hurt you, this Utah defense. He's your leader on the field. We've talked about it week over week that he makes up a lot of mistakes that this team causes, especially in the youth. We got to go to a break, but when we come back, let's talk about this linebacking group, you know, how they did against Oregon State and what maybe we can expect against UCLA.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, we're back, and I really want to talk about this linebacking group, because with Devin Lloyd out, that's going to cause some serious issues, I think, for this defense. And obviously, he's only out for the first half against UCLA. But outside of Lloyd, it's gonna be hard for Utes. Yes, they have Nephi Sewell, who's a great linebacker, but he's just not the same type of athlete as Devin Lloyd. Reed has been playing a lot, but again, a young freshman, not as up there with Lloyd. I'm nervous, guys. To be honest with you, I'm nervous for the defense after what we saw against Oregon State, and I'm even more nervous knowing Devin Lloyd's only going to play the second half.
You know, I'm not, obviously that was not a good performance, but I'm really not too nervous about this game. And maybe I'm overthinking this a little bit too much. I just don't think you're going to see, as young as this team is, you're not going to see that bad of a performance 2 weeks in a row, especially with one of them being at home. I think that's huge. The fact that we're going to be at Rice-Eccles Stadium, the crowd's going to be there. At least we hope it's going to be there. And on top of that, I just think these guys, they're going to watch tape all week. As ugly as that game was, it's going to be such a good learning opportunity for everybody on that defense. Morgan, he expects a lot. He expects a lot out of that defense, and I think he's going to be riding these guys this week. He's going to be challenging them. I think you're going to see a better performance overall from this defense. You know, again, it's probably just little fire under these guys, and there's no doubt about it. Lloyd not being there, it's gonna have an impact. But I think for only a half, we'll be able to cover it up, and I think you're going to see a much better performance.
So I know we're not into the UCLA game yet, but while we're talking about this defense, who do you guys think is going to be stepping up for Lloyd? Right off the top of my head, I think Reed is probably going to get those reps. Hayden Fury is another guy we've seen so far this year.
Well, and I think it'll depend somewhat on what their game plan is.
And if DTR plays.
Right, because he brings a whole different element to that offense with his ability to run, just like a Jaden Daniels we saw a couple weeks ago. So I think that's going to factor in. Kyle Whittingham today said he fully expects DTR will play. We'll see kind of how that goes as the week progresses. I wouldn't be surprised to see him start. Depends on how injured he is and whether he can last the entire game. But I'll bet you Karini Reed is going to be your guy. He came in when Lloyd went out. So unless Morgan is really going to try and change things up, maybe bring three backers onto the field consistently, then that could change things up a little bit. But I would expect you're going to see a lot of Reed and Sewell out there.
I think especially if DTR plays, you've got to have speed and athleticism to mirror the quarterback. A guy like Fury is probably not going to get it done if DTR plays.
Well, and Mata'afa, we didn't see a lot of him against Oregon State. And he has been getting a lot of opportunities prior to that. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if he's injured, dinged up, or just in the doghouse. But he potentially could be somebody that you see a little bit more in the first half.
I really want to see one of the Calverts, to be honest with you.
Well, word on the street is Ethan is a little dinged up.
I have heard that.
Which probably means he's fully in redshirt mode at this point.
But you got Josh, his brother, in there as well. So, I don't know.
The fact that you haven't seen either of them by now, it's probably telling. I don't think you're going to at this point.
That's taking us down the UCLA road. Let's get back to the Oregon State game, especially with Lloyd. Kyle Whittingham on his Monday remarks didn't agree with the targeting.
What say you two?
It's interesting. I think it's interesting that he, after watching it, still disagrees with it.
I'll give Kyle credit for saying that.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Merton Hanks.
It's an interesting call because typically for years when someone gets ejected for targeting, it's a headshot. And I guess by letter of the law, because he led with the crown of his helmet into a chest plate,
I think it's twofold. It's he led with the crown and it was considered a defenseless player.
Quarterback, yeah.
Because he was in the throwing motion, which ultimately I think that double whammy. But I'll tell you, man, I mean, he goes in, sure, yeah, he led with the crown. He hits him in the midsection, nowhere near his head, and we're doing this target. I mean, this is just a bunch of baloney.
I will say it. I know I'm going to have Uke goggles on. Lloyd was getting blocked, though, at the same time. Like, how do you expect a player to be getting pushed by an opponent and trying to make a tackle? You're not going for someone's head. What else do you want him to do?
Well, here's the other aspect to this. If helmet to helmet, I'm not going to argue that. That is what it is.
Yeah.
That's the reason we have this call now.
Yeah, no, that's why it was, because all the headshots,
right? If we're going to take it this step further, where anytime somebody leads with the crown of their helmet on anybody that can be considered defenses, I mean, you literally could lose 5 to 10 guys per game. Because it happens all the time. You can't tell me what Lloyd did is any different than what you're seeing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you probably don't even see that call being made if Oregon State's player wasn't ejected a few plays before.
And the fans would stop booing after 35 minutes. Holy cow, Oregon State.
I do wish, though, they would tweak the targeting and that wasn't an ejection. Maybe get two before you're ejected, but I still don't like if it's in the second half, it carries to the next game.
Well,
that's so soccer, it bugs me. You know, like, you know how soccer, they always have crap that carries over that has nothing to do with the other game? That's how I feel with this targeting. What does that have to do with Utah versus UCLA?
Teaches them a lesson, son. Well,
it's because they don't want to get sued. Well, is when it comes down to it. The NCAA doesn't want to get sued.
That's where, and you've heard it talk about, right? There needs to be a different level of grade, essentially, of a targeting. And if it's a most severe, you know, then sure, you're going to sit out
like
for a
malicious headshot with intent, probably deserves.
But with what Lloyd did, okay, maybe you toss him from the game, but you don't lose the start of the next game. I mean, give me a break. I mean, if anything, it's a 15-yard penalty. And it's just, it's getting ridiculous how this game is being officiated. And you know, Merton Hanks can get on Twitter all day long, every day, and say, oh, we fixed the problem. We do not have an officiating problem. Yes, you do. You still, and it's not just this targeting. It's just bad play, bad calls after bad calls, and inconsistency game in and game out that you're going to get when you're bringing this on top of it. You're expecting these officials to make these calls on contact sport. It just does not make sense how they're officiating things currently under the rules.
And I would honestly like to see how many other times this season in college football across the board that someone has been ejected for a head to the gut.
I've never seen it.
I haven't either.
Never seen it. Not just in Utah. I've never seen it in a game where somebody's got tossed because they led with their helmet to a midsection. And that goes back to the inconsistency, because that was not the only time that happened in that game. And it's not going to be the only time it happens in the next game. It happens all the time. There's just so much inconsistency with it. But it is what it is. He's gone, and the Utes are going to have to be ready to go. And hopefully it's a little wake-up call for everybody just to not lead with your head.
All right. I want to get into special teams. We're going to go on break.
Speaking of dumpster fire.
And yeah, no, I want to bring the heat on this. I have a lot of thoughts. We'll be right back. All right, Utah special teams is a disaster all the way around, whether it's kickoffs for touchdowns, we've seen a couple times this year, punting, field goal kicking. I want to get this out. The way that fans have talked about, me included, Jim Harding with the offensive line, we need to have that same sort of standard across the board for all coaches. And Shaw's not getting it done.
Currently, special he's teams, not.
I love Shaw.
Over the years, has decreased.
There's no doubt
Shaw,
about it.
Shaw, he's a great coach, great recruiter.
Horrible special teams coach.
But honestly, like, we can't give him a pass because of how much we really like him.
Oh, for sure.
If a fan base, if we're going to treat Harding at a certain level because his what he's overseeing isn't playing up to par, we have to have that across the board. That being said, Shaw's not getting it done, and this isn't the first year that special teams has been in trouble. But
I think that's the key, Cam, is this isn't just it wasn't just a bad game for special teams. It's going on two seasons of bad special teams play. Just has not been the standard that it has in the past, right? Kyle Whittingham has built this program on good defense and great special teams play. We have not seen great special teams play in a long time.
No, oh, yeah. And I think part of that gets covered up with guys like Matt Gay and guys like Wisnowski who
Hackett, Phillips. I mean, you've had a good run of field goal kickers, punters, Ray Guy Award winners, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, they've had a really good run, which ultimately that just raises the bar. Now, teams that follow and players that follow those guys are now expected to meet a similar standard, which, you know, may not be fair because those guys were really, really good. But we're not even meeting an average bar at the moment.
No, I mean, if you look at the different phases of special teams, so let's take field goal kicking. When Utah has, the last several years, had taken pride in it, right, with King Louie and Andy Phillips. And
Speaking of Louie, I think Louie was the last field goal kicker who started the job as the starter, started the year as the starter, and ended.
Kept it.
The season.
And then Matt Gay. So I think, you know, there is that kind of that pressure, I guess, on Utah to keep pumping out kickers like that. But the fact that they're just relying on walk-ons year after year is catching up to them.
Well, and you know what else has caught up to them is the Aussie pipeline, right? Matt Hackett and Wisnowski. That was kind of early on in that Australian pipeline. Utah was kind of the one that got that started. And we're kind of getting, obviously, the pick of the litter. Whereas now, everybody's going down to Australia to find punters. You see it all across college football, and it's somewhat being diluted, apparently.
And the last two we've gotten have been lemons.
No, literally. You know, and you know, granted, he is new to this game, and he is just a freshman. So with time, he, you know, I don't even know his name. What is their punter's name? I just know he's not good.
Paisley.
You know, Brad Paisley is
Cameron or Cameron Paisley.
He's just not getting it done.
I think Brad Paisley could get it done more better.
So I will say, so Kyle did say that the first punt wasn't the punter's fault. It was the blocking.
Now that is very true. 75, if you rewatch it, 75, he's the middle guy. He's the one that as soon as the ball is snapped, he steps into that opening and is in the middle of those three guys.
But he's supposed to block the...
He did not touch a soul.
But we've seen that, right? I mean, how many times has Utah flirted with this, with the fire, that they almost get blocked?
Oh, every week.
We've seen it all season long. We knew this was coming because besides the fact that the blocking's been poor, Paisley or Peasley or whatever his name is,
Brad,
kicks in freaking slow motion. I don't know. It's going to take him like 5 seconds to get the ball off his foot.
Yeah, It's something to behold. I can't figure out, like, urgency is always, it's kind of my thing. It's kind of my pet peeve. And when a punter, of all people, does not have any sense of urgency, especially after you've had one blocked, you would think you would have that mother out quick. And the next time, he's slow again, and then he kicks it into basically the helmet of our blocker on the next one and gets bailed out because
you have two number eights.
The equipment manager just can't dress people appropriately.
Oh, I know we're laughing, we're having fun with it, but this is, I mean, Kyle Whittingham talks about to win a football game, you got to win all three phases, offense, defense, special teams.
Well, he better take over phase three if he wants this
They're
to win.
They're consistently losing phase three.
You know, and this is off topic and, you know, maybe not super fair, but it makes me wonder if Shaw is the next DC. Is he ready? Because as a special teams guy, if that's a little much, it really worries me about his future stepping up in, you know, advancement within the program. Obviously, we don't need to talk about that right now, but it definitely is a concern in the back of my mind at how bad we are. And it's not just punting. It's not just blocking. We've had two kickoffs return to the end zone this year. Covey did take one to the house, so maybe that erases one of those bad. One good erases one bad. But overall, it's just the unit has just not been good.
Mm-hmm.
There's some hangover from the Housewives of Salt Lake City.
And I'm not calling for Shaw's head over it. I'm not calling for his head by any means, but something's got to change. And I don't know if you take him off of special teams or if Kyle inserts himself a little bit more on special teams.
Well, Kyle's not doing anything. He's got some free time. Let's go, Kyle. Coach him up.
And Kyle,
Kyle was
the special teams
for
coordinator.
For a long time, he was the coordinator.
It was only a few years back that he was doing it. I just think he needs to say, Shaw, I appreciate your effort. I'll see it out from here.
I think it was back, didn't he make Justin Enna the special team coordinator?
And then things haven't been right since.
All right, that's enough special teams, enough kickers, enough punting. But we're going to see it the rest of the year, though. People are going to bring pressure.
Well, but let's talk. Okay, so here's another aspect. I'm not done yet, Cam. You can't go to commercial yet. Their punter, the first series, it hits the ground, bounces up, bobbles it, bounces on the ground, and we still can't get anybody there in time to block it.
Is he really left-footed, or is he?
No, he's left-footed.
Oh, okay, because he kicked it left, and I was like, "Dude, if he's not left-footed, then..."
we never got a real other opportunity because we never forced him to punt again.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, yeah, Utah didn't bring pressure at all, The guys kind of pretended like they were bringing it, and then as soon as they noticed that the ball was bouncing around, then they're like, "Oh crap!" So then they started to run.
Yeah,
but when you're,
they were like walking.
That's my point, Cam. We never bring pressure.
But when the ball's on the 2 yard line or 1 yard line, whatever it was, they don't even have the requisite 13 yard. Why aren't you going for the block?
And that has been my take. Is I understand their scheming on this and their strategy. Kyle and obviously Shaw want to set up Covey in the return. They're more focused on dropping guys back to set up the return than putting pressure on the punt. I get that. I also get the idea, if you're too aggressive, you may rough the punter and you give them a free first down. That is something you have to take into account, and I get that. But we literally never put pressure on a punt. It's been probably a good 3 years since we have. Mm-hmm. And I'm not exaggerating on that. It's just, we just don't. And the flip side of that...
the analytics.
Well, the flip side of that is every other team puts pressure on us every punt.
Yeah.
So,
and apparently, and Oregon State found the weakness, so people are going to keep coming at it.
Yeah, go to 75. Where's he on the field? Go there.
I agree. I mean, you got to change it up.
I'm looking at the roster, 75, Tim McGraw.
It's Pepe.
Is it really Pepe? Come on, Pepe.
Tim McGraw and Brad Paisley are back there in punt formation.
Kyle's been spending some time in Nashville.
Is Garth Brooks the center now?
Oh, you could tell we like dad jokes, don't we?
All right. Okay. That's an I'm done okay, the special Cam, teams.
You're allowed to go to break now.
Okay, let's go to They've break.
Punting like their Faith Hill.
All right. Let's we got to get control. Let's go to break. Okay. Now we can talk about the offense cuz I'm excited about to talk about the offense. Okay, so Utah offense put up 34 points. Against, you know, a pretty stout Oregon State defense. They score 14 points in the first quarter, you know, back-to-back drives. I thought they were rolling early.
Oh, they were?
They were rolling early. I thought it was just a continuation of ASU, and obviously it was. They slowed up a little bit, though. And a lot of people, especially, you know, fans on Twitter, have pointed to the play calling, the play selection, maybe moving away from the pass a little too early, focusing too much on the run, and then red zone issues again for the Utes, especially within the 5-yard line.
I think it all comes like down to red zone.
I didn't like how cute they got in the red zone.
No.
Scott, you disagreed with me.
What did I disagree with you on?
That I thought they were getting too cute.
No, I would agree with that. I thought.
Oh, I thought you. No, okay, go ahead.
They would be able to march between the 20s at ease, and as soon as we got close to that end zone, it was just like the play calling changed. And I get it, right? You've got less room to work with, so you, to an extent, you have to. But it didn't. They did not keep that same aggressive passing game down around the end zone, and then they went away from the running game in certain situations. On that first fourth down that we didn't convert on, Tavion Thomas takes us right down to the 2-yard line, and he never touched the ball again. Three straight passing plays. You go to Covey, who was open, by the way. Rising just missed him. And then you go to Cam's favorite player, our fullback, Mr. Joe Dirt Ludwig. And
Cam throws it on the wrong shoulder.
And that's on Cam. Because I like that play. This Cam.
Me, I don't like the play.
You didn't like the play. I liked it. And here's,
if he puts the pass in the right spot, he strolls into the end zone.
It's my turn to talk, Cam. Gosh. It's my turn, Mr. Paisley. Okay. Simmer down.
I was gonna say, what other country singer are you gonna name out?
No, but honestly, I like it because what do we always harp on? Where's the creativity, right? Let's show the defense something that they're not expecting. Let's try some new things, right? We've not passed to the fullback.
Exactly. That's why you don't pass it to him on fourth down on the goal line.
It wasn't fourth down. That was third down.
It was third down. And second of all, if Cam puts it on the outside shoulder, he catches it, he could have slow walked into that end zone.
You don't know that. He could have tripped over his feet like he did trying to catch that ball.
Oh my! You would have tripped over your feet too, the way that was thrown.
He was turning around.
No, okay. And Kyle said this in the press conference, right? Like, if the play goes well, it's a great play call. If it doesn't go well, it's the wrong play call.
Sure. I liked the play call. It was just not executed.
This is why I don't like it, though. And I think it kind of goes back to my thought in the overtime against San Diego State, is when it's crunch time, when you're on that goal line, when you got to punch that ball in, you got to go with your sure players. You got to go with your playmakers. Ludwig isn't a playmaker. At least he hasn't proven he's a playmaker. But I don't want the ball going to him on the goal line. I don't want the ball going to O'Toole on a 2-point conversion in overtime. There's a reason why you have a Brant Keithy, a Kincaid, a Covey.
But guess what? Those are the guys the defense is keen on too, right? They think it's going to Keithy, so they probably have double coverage on him, right?
Which they did on fourth down.
Exactly, which allows you to then have single coverage for the other guys to beat their defender, which Ludwig did. I love the call. It was just not executed.
The one play call that I wish they would have changed in that particular series of downs was second down in the pass to Covey. Like Scott said, Thomas got you 4 or 5 yards on first down. Give it to him again. He'll pick up 2 yards and score.
I probably would have liked Thomas on second down and then even again on third down if he didn't get in on second. Because at that point of the game, we were having success running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's easy in hindsight to sit here and say, yeah, well, it didn't work. Obviously, it was a bad call. Some of these calls, they weren't great. But again, even if you go to the fourth down play, the play was there. I think he just threw it to the wrong guy.
There was a guy open behind Keith.
Wide open in the back of the end zone. And that goes to my other point, and you saw that later in the game with the fourth down pass to Covey at the goal line. Let's throw the ball to somebody who's in the end zone. Let's not throw it short of the end zone and make them break a tackle to get in.
Well, I think on that one, that was weird because Enos was right there. I don't know what happened. Enos and Covey were way too close. So one defender covered both of them.
Well, I think one guy's deep, one guy's shallow, but
Enos
got to
go a little bit deeper.
Enos wasn't real deep. And looking back, it's easy to go, okay, well, he probably should have waited a second and that would have freed up Enos in the back of the end zone. But he had a guy right in his face. Yeah. He had to get rid of that ball.
I kind of thought he should have gotten the ball to Covey sooner.
Yeah,
I mean, again, it's so easy to sit here and be Monday morning quarterback.
Sure.
We're not in it. We're not in the play calls. I will give Ludwig credit, though, on those goal lines for having the guts to do it.
That was more Kyle. Kyle tells him we're going for it.
No, I'm not necessarily going for it, but the plays that he called. I don't love it going to his kid on
his
third
kid.
Down, but
Cam, some nepotism.
Cam's tied up on that nepotism.
If you caught my drift on that one, I don't like the ball going there, but I will give them credit because that's one thing that we did harp on in the first couple games of no creativity. No changing it up.
Well, and I think that helps the running game in the future when you now have that on tape that around the goal line, they now have to account for the fullback catching the ball, which could slow up those linebackers slightly and allow that running back to get in next time. And so the more that they do and the more that they put on tape requires that these future defenses to prepare for more and have more in their mind as far as what they may see.
Successful or not. People have to account for it now.
Exactly. And that's why I'm not trying to harp on it that he shouldn't have called a pass play. My whole argument is just who are you giving the ball to? You got to give your ball to your playmakers and your stars.
I still think even if that pass goes to Keithy, if he lines up as a fullback, that's not the pass is in the wrong spot. It's not necessarily who the play is designed for.
Yeah. If Jerry Rice was running that route, he still doesn't catch it.
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know.
That's apples and oranges.
You're not going to budge, Jerry. This is like a political discussion.
Don't compare Jerry
Nobody's
Rice
gonna budge.
To the OC's kid that's on the roster.
OC's kid.
He's got that ability,
it's
Cam.
It's Joseph Ludwig to you, sir.
All right. Cam Rising. Another clean game, you should say. You know, no interceptions, 2 touchdowns. Scott, you called it 22 of 36. He was tremendous in the running game, picked up 73 yards.
Dude's a beast, man.
Yeah, I mean, his ability to run and pick up first downs when nothing else is there, it was crucial in this game, and it has been all season.
I mean, he picked up a 3rd and 12 with his legs, a 3rd and 8. I mean, he was single-handedly keeping those chains alive. Or keeping Utah's offense on the field on those third downs. He was so good outside of a few throws. You know, as we've talked about, you know, he wasn't perfect by any means, and there's definitely some room to improve. But without that type of a performance, Utah's losing early third quarter and the game's over.
Oh yeah.
I mean he kept that offensive as much as he could, he got that offensive moving the whole game. And it's remarkable if you think about it. And when we talked about this last week, he's still a young quarterback.
He's only a sophomore.
And a sophomore that doesn't have a lot of reps.
This was his fifth starting
game. Yeah, he's
and
young.
And I think that's the thing we've talked about is because he's been here now for 3 years. So he knows the offensive system well. He just doesn't have the reps. And I think sometimes you kind of see that and maybe on those goal line situations, you know, he hasn't really had a lot of experience in live game situations. I think that's maybe where maybe his youth comes into play when you see that. But the fact that what you said, Ryan, fifth game starting and against a very talented Oregon State team kept Utah in it in the fourth quarter, I think bodes well for the future and for Cam Rising.
And this was all after a shot to the head on a targeting play. I mean, the dude just doesn't... Some of those falls he takes, I'm like just cringing, watching, thinking, please get up, please get up. And he pops up and just runs right back and he just does it again. Come on, Cam, slide. Run out of bounds. We need you.
Can you imagine? A lot about Travis Wilson.
think about this for a minute. Imagine this team without him at quarterback.
We saw it earlier in the year.
Exactly. We need him. Please stay healthy.
He does need to be careful. But what I really like, though, and we really haven't seen Utah have an offense that can just move the ball at will for a long time. And like you said, we wouldn't have been in this game without that. But with the defense being as young and inefficient as they've been, this team needs this offense to score a lot of points to win games.
Yeah. And I mean, typically going up against Oregon State, yes, they're a much improved team, but had you told me we're going to score 34 points and move the ball like we did, I would have thought that would have been more than sufficient, even with a defense that's not, you know, what we're used to.
And really, 4 yards away from being 48 points in a win.
Yeah.
I mean, the total yards, over 450 yards.
Yeah, they moved the ball.
You're going to win a lot of ball games
doing
that.
They moved the ball at will.
Zero turnovers.
Yeah, no, it was clean. And it really just comes down to the block punt, which was taken. I mean, that's 7 free points you just hand them. And then not coming out with anything on those fourth down goal line attempts.
Well, not coming away with anything when the other blocked punt happened and they got turned the field. We got the ball back.
Yeah.
First down on their side of the field and came away with nothing there too.
What are your guys' thoughts? Kyle goes for it on fourth down on both of those. Do you like it? Would you? I mean, obviously it's easy to say, well, kick the field goal, let's get the points, and that does change kind of end of game strategy a little bit.
On that one though, they did kick that was the 52-yard field goal they missed, right?
You're just
talking about the goal line situation.
I'm just talking about the two goal line situations.
The first one, I liked it. The first one they went for, I liked it. You're being aggressive. The second one, I didn't like it as much because I think at that point it was a 10-point game.
I believe, yeah.
And so I was thinking, just get the points. Just get the points, and then you're only one score behind. I didn't hate it, but I definitely on that second one, I wish they would have.
Which is funny because it's kind of a shift in Kyle's mentality a little bit. And he's mentioned this, it's an analytics. So obviously analytics have entered the discussion in his coaching, which in some ways is really good. But Kyle used to be the guy that would always take the points. He was not the gambling guy. He'd take those 3 points, put it on his defense, and it won us a lot of games.
Well, now he doesn't have that defense to rely on. So I think he has to gamble with getting the point.
Well, and potentially the fact that having a unpolished kicker could also be playing a factor as well, because, you know, I mean, he goes 1 for 2 in this game. And
he definitely has the leg for the 52-yarder.
He does.
52 yards is a long kick.
And it's essentially his first kick since being named starter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to sit back and go, oof, man, some tough calls throughout. But offensively, man, we're right there. It's just fun to watch this team offensively. Because even... I mean, in years past, you get down 10 points on the road to a team that's got all the momentum in the world. Game's over.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I didn't think the game was over. I thought the way we're moving the ball, all it's going to take is we're going to keep scoring, and the defense is, will get a stop or two, and we can still pull this out. So this Cam Rising has done something to this program and to this fan base. He's given this fan base hope.
There's life in the offense. Before we jump on to whatever's next, I just want to say, Devon Vele, what a stud he's becoming. That long ball, he fought through the PI, pass interference
and double coverage.
Came up with that. If he continues, he's going to be dang hard to beat.
Well, they talked about it during the game. Kyle has been alluding to it for years that this kid's a potential NFL star, and you're seeing it because he's got the speed, he's got the height, and now he's producing. Used to be just a lot of talk, a lot of hype. Now he's going out there and he's making great and very important catches week in and week out. It kind of seems like he's kind of the go-to guy.
Yeah,
for Rising. Rising likes him. He goes to him a lot, right? And obviously, he goes to Keithy and he goes to these tight ends a lot. But as far as the wide receiver position, I think he and Vele definitely have a connection going on that.
So speaking of wide receivers, it was nice to see Dixon get in there. I think he had one reception. Too. Oh, yeah. Enos has been...
Dixon is always good for one sighting a game. You know,
it was a nice throw and catch.
Beautiful. Yeah. It was beautiful.
Yeah, then he went up in the air and got it.
But again, you're still seeing this wide receiving group continue to progress and mature, and Cam's a big part of that. He's helping these guys to go out and get confidence, because I think confidence has been the biggest issue with this wide receiver core, because they don't get a lot of targets typically, and they've just continually been harped on. Now they're getting opportunities to kind of shut us all up. Go out there and catch the ball all over the field and make plays, and it's just fun to watch.
All right, so that kind of do it on our thoughts on this game, and hopefully you can put this behind them. When we come back, we'll start talking Utah and UCLA. All right, so the Utes will welcome in the Bruins of UCLA this week into Rice-Eccles. It's a night game. I think they're wearing Scott's favorite uniforms, so it's going to be electric.
Gag me with a spoon.
So UCLA's coming in after losing to Oregon 34-31.
And they were also up 14 points early.
They were. UCLA, this is a different UCLA team than I think we have kind of seen over the last couple of years.
Yeah, because they're not at the bottom of the standings.
So looking at their schedule, probably their best win of the season, it was LSU, who was 16 at the time. The LSU is not, the LSU that they have been the last couple of years. So maybe Stanford, they won a couple of weeks ago, 35-24. But UCLA, a lot of people, and Yogi Roth was saying this on the Pac-12 Network, has the best offensive line in the conference. And for Utah's D-line that has kind of been up and down, that gives me some concern.
After seeing Oregon State, I'm going to give them the nod on best offensive line.
They're very good. I mean, there's a reason why they lead the league in rushing, especially at Baylor.
Scored.
Yeah.
So with UCLA, though, DTR, their quarterback, suffered an injury late in the game against Oregon. We're recording this on Monday. There was reports he was dressed, but was not throwing at practice on Monday afternoon.
DTR, as we've all seen throughout his career at UCLA, is up and down. I would say probably more down than up. I just remember last time they were here.
He was a mess.
He was a mess. I mean, how many times did the ball go through his hands, or he went back to throw a pass and it fell out of his hands?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he could be rattled. He's a heck of an athlete, and if you let him get loose, he'll beat you. But I take my chances with him throwing the ball.
Oh, I think that if he's in the game, that's your game plan, is you have to stop their rushing attack, which is very good.
It is good.
But they're kind of a three-headed monster with their two backs, especially that transfer from Michigan and DTR. All three of them can run the ball very well. So if Utah if he's in there, Utah has to take that running attack away and make them beat you with throwing the ball.
Well, they're kind of similar to Oregon State in the sense that most of their yards come on the ground and they do just enough through the air, right? Which we just saw how well that worked against our defense. So it, you know, somewhat of a concern. Obviously, UCLA is not as well of a coach team as Oregon State. They're more talented and they've got some real good playmakers and they've got some guys, as Cam, you just mentioned, that can run the ball and are very efficient at it. But it's going to come down to DTR, just not a guy that really scares me. He can make some big plays, but he's not super consistent. He's not going to beat you consistently through the passing game all night long.
And if he's dinged up, it's going to make it even worse for them.
And it appears it's a shoulder injury. I mean, we don't know what it is.
He did dress today.
He did dress, but he didn't
participate.
He didn't throw.
Well, clearly it was bad enough that he couldn't finish the game last week.
It looked like a collarbone, to be honest with you. The way he was grabbing at it, it looked like a collarbone injury. But again, that speculating, watching on TV, so I'm probably making a fool of myself.
As you usually do.
Like a shoulder.
And we're going to find out if it was really a knee injury.
Or an Adam's apple.
Those are sneaky bad injuries, I'll tell you.
Those dang Adam's apples.
Can really mess with your head a little bit. But this is a pivotal game, right? The Utes, we had a little buffer going into that Oregon State game, and we spent it. So this is a big game. UCLA sits at 3-2 in the conference with one more loss. If they were to beat us, now we're tied with them. They got the tie break. So this is a real pivotal game for Utah in this South race to maintain that lead, and which would be huge because if you beat UCLA, it's basically UCLA, Utah, Arizona State for the South, and you will have the tiebreaker over both of those teams. So this game is monumental.
And I think that's probably the important thing that Utah losing to Oregon State is, if you're going to lose a conference game, you never want to, but at least make it to a team in the North because of that tiebreaker situation. Because how many times have we seen at the end of the year the conference, the division is because of a tiebreaker?
Oh, yeah, it's key. So obviously you already took care of USC, but USC is pretty much out of the picture at this point. So this game will be enormous, especially, I mean, that only leaves you with Colorado and Arizona as the South Division foes left on the schedule if you can take care of business, which you would assume, unless the world turns on its side, those should be pretty easy wins for Utah, as bad as Colorado and Arizona are. So big game for this team, and obviously, we're not out of the woods by any means. You still have Oregon coming to Rice-Eccles, and you still have to go to Stanford and play in front of two people. But Stanford, you've seen it this year. They can put it together. And they can run the ball, and if we can't stop the run or can't figure out how to consistently stop the ball, so there's still enough potential slip-ups on this schedule, but you got to take it one game at a time, and this one's huge.
It's crazy, though, when you think back of several weeks, and we're sitting here still atop of the South Division. We've beaten ASU. We've beaten USC. And I don't think any of us saw us winning those two games, especially after the San Diego State and BYU.
Oh, no. No, I mean, mm-hmm. Cam, as we've talked about, Cam's completely changed just the overall feeling around this program, just the momentum that he, through his play, has been able to develop. I mean, it's just a night and day difference. And I mean, USC's not their usual self either.
Oh, sure they're not.
And Arizona State, unfortunately, you know, I mean, fortunate for us, they are their normal self. I mean, that ASU defense had 10 seniors starting. 10 seniors starting. And look what Cam was able to do to them. And now they're going to be on sanctions. So, I mean, they're kind of out of the picture for the foreseeable future. So, but no, you know, and this is obviously there has been some talk, some rumors out there that maybe the South and North divisions may go away.
Mm-hmm.
And the future championship game will just come down to the top two teams in the conference.
I think that's a very interesting talking point that the commissioner kind of threw out there. And if I understand right, they'd go from 9 conference games down to 8 if they did that.
Yeah. So you're missing a lot of teams year in and year out, which brings up the question that, you know, a lot of people have been talking about, the equitability of the schedule, right? And how that gets worked out moving forward. Are the top teams missing all the top other teams consistently so that they can be towards the top and help the conference? And are the low guys the ones just getting drilled week in and week out by the tough schedule? So that, you know, obviously there's some things that have to get figured out there. And then that opens up an extra non-conference game for each team as well. But I mean, it really changes things.
It's the SEC model, right? I mean, I think Alabama went to Florida this year, and it was, I think on the broadcast, I said it was the first time they had been to Gainesville in 10 years. Like, can you imagine if Utah went 10 years without going to Washington? Like, that's just crazy.
It is
crazy. Whatever happens, I'm not sure I know or have a feel for what I would like, but I think what I do like is this new commissioner puts things out there. Like, there's options. He's thinking, he's like trying to think of ways to improve and revise instead of just the same old thing we saw.
And it's
the
more
old
than,
regime.
It's more than 9 o'clock kickoffs.
Yeah.
Right.
Or fish sticks or whatever.
Oh yeah. The seafood.
All the different official Pac-12 sponsors.
You know, since we're talking about the Pac-12, let's just get into the scores for this past week for the Pac-12. Starting off, Arizona almost got their first win, and I am so pissed because I called Arizona to win, and Bear Down failed me. They lose to Washington 21-16, had a lead in the fourth quarter, and gave up 14 unanswered points in the fourth.
And that was just due to the athletes of Washington. I watched that game, and they still have studs. I mean, they've been recruiting at a very high level for a long time. They've got talent there. Jimmy Lake's just trying to find a way to cover it up as best he can.
So Washington quarterback Morris goes 13-21, and everyone was calling for him to be benched, and Lake stuck with him. Led him to victory, but yikes. It is not a good time to be a Husky fan right now.
It's never a good time to be Husky.
We kind of talked about the Oregon-UCLA. Oregon wins 34-31. It was a good game. Back and forth. I thought Oregon in that second half was going to win running away, and then UCLA came back, made it a tighter game.
That's just that, but those are some of those mistakes around Oregon to allow UCLA to come back like that with those picks. And
that's been Oregon's MO all year, though. They like play to the level of their opponent and they just squeak out a win.
And they've been so up and down. You don't know. I mean, you don't know from possession to possession what kind of Oregon team you're going to get.
No. And part of their problem is their quarterback play.
Yeah.
He's very inconsistent.
Brown, if you try to make him beat you with his arm, I think that bodes well for you. But they got a lot of playmakers. That running back, Dye, is a phenomenal kid, phenomenal athlete. Cal gets their first win in conference play against Colorado, 26-3. And the last game, BYU upsets Washington State, 21-19. I thought Washington State had that. If they didn't miss that PAT, that's a different ball game.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I guess, you know, BYU is They're a pretty lucky team, you know. Not many programs get to go play a team with 5 coaches on staff.
Hey, but they're still undefeated in the Pac-12.
Well, since we're on this, I love that there's a tweet going around. This is the first time BYU has beat four P5 teams in 1 year.
Oh, yes.
Like, but hang the banner.
But they haven't had many opportunities. Only 11 years.
But they'd rather play UMass and Toledo.
So looking ahead to this week's games, obviously for Utah fans, we're going to cheer for anyone who's playing against Oregon State. Washington State is traveling down to face the Sun Devils. I don't know if Washington State's got it. Losing all their coaches. I thought they could rally last week. I don't know if they win another game this year.
And after ASU's coming off a loss and a bye week, I think Washington State's doomed on that.
But with that being said, go Cougars. Arizona's traveling to the LA Coliseum to play the Trojans. Do the Wildcats get their first win?
They could.
Is that a yes?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with it.
You got the bear down. Where are you going, right?
I think Arizona breaks through this week.
I don't know. I think that fourth quarter against Washington kind of broke me on Arizona. I don't think they win a game this year. I was
kind of
high
broke
on them.
You. So you were high on them. But
I was high on them for 1 week. I was high on them for 1 week, and then that one quarter broke me. Washington's traveling to Stanford.
You got to go with Stanford.
Yeah.
That one.
You got
Washington's
to.
So bad.
All right, and then let's get into the UCLA-Utah picks. So going into the game, the line opened up with Utah about a 3-point favorite. As we're recording this, it's moved to about 6.5. I'm surprised, to be honest with you. I thought after the Oregon State game, the UCLA would be favored and then maybe shift towards Utah later in the week. But no, Utah is the favorite going in. Scott, we'll kick it over to you. What's your score and who do you got?
I think we're going to see our Utes bounce back, have a good performance. The offense continues to hum, so I think we're going to put points on the board. I'm going to go Utes 40, UCLA 28.
Ooh. Wow, 40-28. Ryan, where are you going?
I think the Utes bounce back also. I think the offense continues to be able to move the ball and put some points on the board, and I think they win 45-37.
Okay, I kind of like where you guys are going with this. I agree. I think there's going to be a lot of points scored. Both teams are putting up a little around 33 points a game, giving up about 25. I think it's really going to be an offensive-minded game, though. I have Utah winning 42-35. Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Drum and Feather. Drum, the letter N, Feather.
And Scott?
Yeah, you find me @UteMan_forever.
And at a Brad Paisley concert.
You can follow me.
Slow motion.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Utah Man Podcast, at our home, UtahManPodcast.com. And anywhere you listen to a podcast, we are there. And hopefully Utah does put this game of Oregon State behind them. They get back on track. And they beat the Divas of UCLA and go Utes.
Go Utes.
Go Utes. We'll be till I die. Kayai.
We're good. Let's cut it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are their own and are no way affiliated with the University of Utah.